We've got a fun episode today. I have a PSA executive, Chris Carlin, the director of customer experience for PSA, who is here in studio. And I want to ask him a lot of questions that hopefully will give you the leg up next time you submit a grading submission. I'm going to ask him what collectors maybe get wrong the most when they submit cards for grading, what tips he has for collectors. I'm also going to ask him about things like, well, grading consistency and upcharges, and even the concept of cracking and resubmitting cards for grading, and if that's really a good strategy or not. So it's going to be interesting to see everything Chris has to say. He even, by the way, brought a couple of his own personally graded items, some really cool things to share with us at the end of this conversation today. So here inside the Arena Club studio in Kasai Cards HQ, please welcome Chris Carlin from PSA. The Jeff Wilson Show is brought to you by Arena Club, the official home of Slab Packs. Now available every day, Slab Packs offer an exciting way to collect graded cards with confidence. Plus, every pack comes with an instant offer to buy your slab. Don't miss out. Explore the latest Slab Packs and more by downloading the Arena Club app. Just search Arena Club in your app store and use promo code SCI20 for 20% off your first purchase. Chris, welcome to Cards HQ. Yeah. We're happy to have you here in store.
It's amazing. This is such a special place that you've built. And just seeing all the people from all over the place come in, it's really cool. We actually had a guy drive down from Detroit just to drop off with us.
To drop off here at the submission
center.
That's
right.
Okay.
Because he didn't want to put his stuff in the mail. So, but you built something very special here. So it's everyone who comes in is really blown away. And the 13-year-old collector in me would have died had I known that something like this could exist someday. So it's awesome.
That is one of the funnest parts about having the store is seeing the kids. They just love it. And you'll see it. You're going to be here for our trade night we have tomorrow night. We get tons of kids at the trade night, and it's just, they're all like, you know, kids in a big candy store. Their candy store.
Absolutely,
you know? It's the modern candy store in many ways, so they love it. That's awesome. Well, Chris has been in town, just kind of letting the audience know, because as I think most of the audience probably knows, we have a PSA submission center here inside Cards HQ with actual PSA employees. So you've been down for a couple of days working with the employees and just kind of helping promote the submission center. How's that? Before we jump into questions about PSA, which we're going to get into, but how has that experience been?
I am blown away by, you know, this whole idea of opening up a shop in a shop came only about a year and a half ago. And we needed to find the right partners in large shops that have a brand that kind of matches PSA in terms of quality and reputation. And thank you for having us, for starters, and trusting us. But it's really a way to demystify the grading process for customers. And by having PSA staff in the shop, being able to answer questions, guide customers on the right path. And you know, I was talking with my staff yesterday about sometimes you have to tell people, don't submit this if you can show them that, you know, it might not grade well. And with that, you know, we build trust with the customer and the community, and they'll bring things back to us in the future.
Yeah, good. Well, we are thrilled to have PSA here inside Cards HQ. So let's talk about PSA, because the audience, it's always a topic. Everybody, grading touches everybody in some way within the sports card world. And it can also be one of the most controversial topics in the sports card world, especially when people feel like maybe they're not getting grades consistently or not what they thought they were going to get, or upcharges. And, you know, we'll touch on some of that.
Okay, sure.
But I'm curious to start off, where do you see kind of PSA's place in the broader sports card ecosystem right now?
You know, we just published a really large report on, you know, problems we're seeing, counterfeits we're seeing. Really, PSA, you know, in my opinion, is that that mechanism to help collectors determine if their items are real or fake, or coming up with a common language for what this particular item is. So it's an important role. It's one that we take, you know, as a real responsibility to the hobby. And it's funny, you know, the PSA, people might not know this, but PSA's CEO, Nat Turner, and PSA's president, Ryan Hoag, actually first met on the set registry message boards.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, when you have leadership that is passionate about the hobby and passionate about collectibles, it really trickles down and makes things a lot easier for us, because we're all on the same page with regard to the role we play in the industry and how important it is, and how we have to get it right, you know, for our customers.
Yeah, well, I've interacted with Ryan and Nat a bunch of times, and they're absolutely very true collectors. They both have incredibly impressive collections, and you know, they both geek out over cards.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Yeah, I'm glad the leadership is that way. Speaking of the report, you mentioned the report that recently came out about counterfeit and inauthentic cards and that type of thing. We're not going to go into all the details in the report. The audience can easily go find that on PSA's website or social media.
Yeah.
Fascinating stuff, though. What surprised you, or maybe stood out to you most from that?
I think what surprised me most about it is the influx of counterfeit Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
And printing today, it's so much easier to print things than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So it's not surprising that that there's bad actors out there that can see that, all right, this is a $5,000 piece of, you know, card stock. I'll try to make some. And, you know, I often say, if only these people could use their talents for good, what would the world be like? But it's concerning. It's concerning to see in that category something like that happen. What I'm not surprised about is the PSA DNA side also published the most fraudulent signatures, the ones that don't pass our authentication. And Mickey Mantle was up there. And I myself bought a Mickey Mantle autograph this year. It was a business card. I collect business cards. And I wanted it to be real so bad, Jeff. And I submitted it to PSA and it came back. And I even submitted it to Beckett. And it came back
too. Both rejected.
Yeah, so I myself, you know, got stung by it. So it's really important, if you are buying autographs that are not authenticated, just to look at that report to get a feel for who are the most faked autographs out there.
I was in Singapore. Thailand. I was in Singapore as well, but it was actually Thailand where I was with my family last summer. And we walked into a store, and I searched, we were in Phuket, Thailand, and I searched trading card stores near me, and one popped up.
Oh, wow.
And so we walked into the trading card store, and they sold various forms of collectibles. They had some trading cards, not a ton, but they had trading cards. That's why they popped up on the map. We walked into the store. It was all boxes of Pokemon, boxes and boxes and boxes of all the different sets. And we're looking at them. And my son, my 11-year-old son, Harrison, he turns to me and goes, "Dad." And I go, "Yeah." And he goes, "These are all fake."
Yeah.
And I said, "What?" And he goes, "None of these boxes are real." And I said, I picked one up and I'm like, it looks real. Maybe the seal on it's feels a little different. But I'm like, these are, you know, international cards. So it looks real. And he's like, "Dad," he goes, "I promise these are not real boxes." And I said, "How do you know?" And he goes, I forget what set it was, but he goes, "This set, they did not make booster boxes of this set. And this is a booster box of this set." Yeah. And I said, "Well, maybe in the US, but not internationally." He's like, "No, Dad, I know. And I know that." And I said, "Okay." I said, "Buy it." We bought it. And it was also extremely cheap, you know, compared to what the product should have been. We bought it. We brought it back to our hotel room. We opened it. He was 100% correct.
Yeah.
It was all 100% fake, but they had the wrappers, you know, they had the individual foil wrappers.
Yep.
It looked real.
Yeah.
Now, once you got the cards out of the pack, you could tell.
Yeah.
They weren't the same thickness. The kind of the foil was different.
Yeah.
It looked different.
Yeah.
It didn't look right, but they really fake the whole thing from the box down.
Yeah,
to the, you know,
it's wild.
And they were just there for sale. I mean, I guess there's no rules or regulations around that in Thailand. So I'm sure you're getting hit with that kind of stuff all the time.
Well, you know, I love myself going to flea markets or things along those lines with my kids. And even my son had an experience where he saw a bunch of Legos were fake, you know, and they even said no pictures, you know, on there. So, And it goes back to something we all know. If it seems too good to be true, it probably is, with regard to the price or what have you. So you need to be careful out there for sure.
All right, let's talk about grading a little bit. Give me one thing that you think maybe is most misunderstood about grading by collectors.
You know, there's a lot of things that people misinterpret, and I'll give you one thing that I misunderstood before coming here. So I worked at Upper Deck for 24 years and dealt with a lot of situations where maybe people had premium cards that were damaged and we're replacing them out for people, and maybe someone's grading something and they got a six on it and they want us to replace it. And what I always felt is that maybe these grading companies are manipulating the population reports. And if they only have one that's a 10, it's going to sell for more, so they'll get more people submitting. And I honestly felt that was a thing. And then when I started talking to some of the folks at PSA, and some of the former Upper Deck staff had moved there, and coming there myself, it was very eye-opening, where I realized it's just not the case. And population reports are, I believe, a collector's best friend, you know, where you can kind of see, you know, what's the story of all these cards that have been graded, and why do nines and tens carry a premium over fives and sixes? Because there's usually a lot less of them. It's harder to get, especially in vintage type cards. So I think the population reports is something that collectors can misinterpret, and there's a variety of ways why. You know, there's cards that have high population counts. You know, the Pikachu, Van Gogh, for example,
famous for that,
huge pop counts, but still the pricing is crazy too. But sometimes you'll see cards with low pop counts and you'll think that, okay, this is something special, where maybe it has a low pop count because people don't want to grade it, you know, because it is so common that people wouldn't grade it. So I think it's important to use the population reports, but understand that there will be anomalies to them, where some high pop count cards, if they're popular enough, have high values to them. And some cards, if they have low pops, it may be that, you know, it's not something that's widely graded.
People, it's great advice. The card market very much operates on supply and demand. Just like any other economic market, it is extremely true in the card market. And so what you're talking about is people confusing scarcity, people thinking that scarcity, which is the supply side of the equation, is really all that matters, when in fact the demand side matters as much.
Yeah.
So in the example of the Pikachu you talked about, it's not a scarce card. There's a ton of supply of that card, but the demand is even higher than the supply. It's just a card that people absolutely want. So that's why the prices are so high, even though there are tens of thousands of that card in PSA 10. On the other hand, you might have a card that's a pop 1 PSA 10 or a pop 5 PSA 10 that's unbelievably scarce, very, very little supply. But if there's no demand, it's worthless.
Yeah.
It makes no difference.
Well, and so, some dealers will get a little crafty, and the thing that's interesting, when you look at someone's price tag at a show, what I've seen, the only other thing that they'll put on there besides the price is pop one,
right,
pop two, pop three. So dealers know that it means something to collectors, and definitely try to make it a unique selling point.
It means something when there's demand for the card. When the card is a card that people do care about and want to buy and want to transact, then the fact it's a pop one, that could be make it more special, potentially,
for sure.
But if the demand's not there, if it's like, well, that's just because not that many people have graded it, because people didn't bother to grade it, you bothered to grade it, congrats on your pop one, like, do people care that much about the card?
Exactly.
It doesn't help. Or the other thing dealers drive me crazy with is when they put pop one on a card that's a PSA 8.
Yes,
and it's like, well, that's great, but there's 840 PSA 9s.
Yeah,
so your pop one PSA 8 isn't really that special.
Yeah, you know? I often see that with the point grade. So if it's a 7.5, 8.5, because we do a lot less of those. So
those are pretty rare. So you're talking about pop reports, right? So as a investor or collector, how much should the pop report matter? How do you suggest they kind of navigate that if they're trying to make an investment decision into a card?
Yeah, I, well, I think there's a number of factors. Obviously, and it differs from sports to gaming. So if we look at One Piece right now, One Piece is definitely a category that's blown up. But they're reprinting some of the games because their demand's there. And it's not something that you see reprints on in sports cards. So for me, with how I collect One Piece, I've been collecting a lot more of the tournament prize cards or things along those lines that I know there's only going to be a finite amount of them out there. And even dipping back into the older One Piece set from 1999, I think is somewhat overlooked by collectors because I know they're not going to make any more of it. So I think that it's important to use Pop Reports in a way to help guide you, but also you need to understand, could there be more cards hitting these Pop Reports in the future? And in the TCG space, that's something you kind of got to be careful of.
Yeah, that's great advice. What is one mistake that you think maybe collectors make the most when grading, when determining what cards to, you know, submit for grading?
Yeah, I see one thing all the time. Collectors know to look at corners. They know to look at edges. They know to look at centering. They always skip surface. And at the National, once a day, Jeff, I'll have a customer come up with a grade complaint. Why is this a six? It's flawless. I do this all the time. And sometimes I can't see it, so I'll ask the grader, and they'll be, it's right here, Chris. They just see things differently than I do. But I'll often tell the customer, I'm going to show you what's wrong with this card if you want me to. But once I show you, you're not going to be able to unsee it. And they always say, you know, I want to see it. I want to see it. I know I'm right. And I'll show it to them. It's usually something on the surface, whether it be a scratch, a shim line, thumbnail print. You know, there's a crease. Creases are killers. It will take your card down to a six. So these are, the surface is the landscape that has the most, the highest volume on the card to have something go wrong with it. And it's one that's overlooked the most, I think.
Always check that surface before you submit. Sure. How does PSA treat modern versus vintage differently? Or do they actually just treat them the exact same?
No, we don't. They are different categories for sure. We have different researchers that will catalog them and make sure they have the right labels on them. And we have different graders that will handle those. So there's a lot of nuance to vintage that takes people who have a lot of time and role and a lot of experience dealing with that. I think they're different animals for sure. And that's how we treat them.
One thing that has gotten really popular recently is cracking and resubmitting cards. People, you know, because the grade matters to the value of cards so often, if somebody gets back a ultra modern card that's a PSA 9 and they thought it looked really good, that's a candidate for them to potentially crack it out of the PSA holder, submit it back in again, and see if they can get a 10. What do you think, and what does PSA think about this kind of crack and resubmit culture?
Yeah, it's really funny. When I came here, I was also managing the customer care department for PCGS, coins and banknotes. And in coins, the crackout game is something that is done all the time by dealers. And it's wild, Jeff, because the grading scale for coins isn't 1 to 10, it's 1 to 70. And there are plus grades you can get. So if I get a 59 plus, it is the top, you know, 20% of that 59s get that plus grade. And dealers will do almost anything for that plus grade. So they'll crack out and resubmit and resubmit and resubmit and resubmit just in hopes of getting that plus grade. And it can be, you know, a big financial difference between the two. But we see that a ton. And the graders come to know these coins. They call them old friends. So as they come through the grading room, they're like, oh, here's another old friend that we know is going to be is this. But with regard to cards, it's not anywhere near that right now. Will it get that way? I don't know. I think that the best piece of advice I can give people is really look at your items before you use the service to review. I would also really, there's nothing that gives me more anxiety than seeing a card cracked out. I mean, there's plastic flying all over the place. There's so many things that can go wrong with that. Oftentimes I'll tell people, you know, why do you, is it really worth chasing this 9, this 10, when it looks pretty good here, it presents really well. So I think collectors really need to make sure there's not something there that's really going to give it a negative grade before they make a decision to do that. But I have a huge amount of panic and anxiety every time I watch a card cracked out.
And you did mention PSA's review service. PSA does have a review service where if you get a card back as a 9 and you really thought it was a 10, you have to pay, but you can resubmit it under a review instead of having to crack it out. Is that something people actually use often? Is it something that actually is ever successful?
It is successful from time to time. I don't have the rates in front of me, of the success rates, but I think collectors genuinely prefer to crack it out and submit like a fresh card. They feel like they're getting a fresh look that way. I can say that the graders, you know, they're not like, oh, this is a 9. No. You know, like they do, people pay for the service. They review the card. It is a little tricky to see through the plastic, you know, even on a crossover. I think a mistake that collectors make sometimes is setting that minimum grade too high, because, you know, the graders need to have high confidence that they can, that it will transition to that grade. And grading's three-dimensional, you know, like Boeing and things along those lines all play a role in, you know, the final grade of a card. So, the review service is definitely something that collectors use. I recommend it if you feel strongly about it, but definitely make sure you're looking at your card before you make that final decision.
It's got to be difficult, especially these days, with the amount of scale-up that PSA has had to do, the amount of hiring, for PSA to maintain consistency across graders. And one of the criticisms you see sometimes on social media of PSA is that there is, in collectors' opinion, some inconsistency amongst graders. How does PSA think about that?
I think that is one of the things that we feel is most important, is grading consistency. Obviously, taking care of the customer's items when they're in our possession is number one, but grading consistency is right up there. And what I've been personally really relieved to see is that, you know, in this time where there's so much demand for our services, and we have a backlog and we have these turnaround time, you know, situations that it's hard for us to hit these turnaround times, most businesses would throw anyone in the grading room. Most businesses would be like, we need to make this money now. We need to, you know, take advantage of this hot market. And PSA is just not that way. You know, most graders are training for 6 months in the role before their grades even count. And, you know, our international graders from Japan came and worked with our grading team for months and months before, you know, we felt that they were at the same level consistently. And it's both an art and a science. It's really a different type of thing. But I'm always so impressed when I get to work with our grading team, because the way they see cards is just a little bit different. And what I often will express to people is in the 80s, there were those pictures that if you looked at them long enough, you know, you'd see a three-dimensional image, and they can see that like that, you know? So if I'm asking them, what's wrong with this card? I just can't see it. They're always like, Chris, it's right here. What's wrong with you? Why can't you see this? And it just goes to show that they are the best in the biz. I'm constantly blown away by them. But time and role is something that we talk a lot about internally, and it's something that graders have to be effective. So when I started 4 years ago, we could grade 40,000 cards in a day, and now we're grading about 100,000 cards a day. So we have had a really impressive scale up. But again, they're not just going to throw anyone in the grading room. They want there to be that consistency, which is great to see.
Yeah, it's got to make scaling tough. The fact that it is such a highly trained job, and the fact that you're cautious about, you know, putting people through the required training before throwing them in there.
Yeah.
People are critical of whether PSA, like the fact that the backlog exists and, you know, why isn't PSA scaling up more? As a business owner, I could only, you know, myself that has challenges even with our own hiring at times and being able to scale quickly enough to meet demand. And we don't require the level of precise training that a grader, you know, would be required to have at PSA. So I imagine that's just the hardest part to scaling is just hiring and then the time that it takes to get the person fully trained and fully integrated where they're actually adding capacity to the team.
Yeah, and I think it's who do you put in these roles to oversee this and operate this? And there's a lot of people at PSA I really respect, but the one person who I was most nervous about interviewing with during my interview was a lady named Jackie Curiel. And Jackie is kind of a hobby legend, and she'll laugh if I said that, but at PSA, we all think of her with great reverence because she's been with the organization for a long time, worked with Joe Orlando for a number of years, been PSA's chief of staff. But she is in charge of helping us grow the capacity for the grading room. And she's a tough cookie. She's going to make sure that we have the best and brightest in there and that they're trained up and doing things right and getting it right for our customers.
Yeah. Well, we've already talked now about, you know, grading consistency. Let's just go to another controversial topic, which is upcharges.
Okay.
Something that annoys a lot of collectors. What's your take on upcharges?
A price adjustment is a tricky thing. You know, there's not a lot of businesses where you don't know exactly what you're going to pay for an item until it's done. But what I often tell customers is, you know, a nice thing about PSA is you're not going to be charged for the service today. You're charged when the service is completed. So it's when I look at businesses that mirror PSA, dry cleaning is one that I come to. And there's times when I drop an item off of the dry cleaner. I'm not sure what I'm going to pay. You know, maybe it's a unique suit that I have, or, you know, the material's different, or I don't know why females pay more for dry cleaning than men do, or our garments are bigger than theirs, but it's just, you know, the pricing model is a little different. And with PSA, the reason why the pricing model is the way it is, that one of the biggest reasons, and something not enough collectors talk about, is PSA's comprehensive grade guarantee. We are the only grading service that offers something like this. And I really encourage collectors to check it out, psacard.com/financial guarantee. And I think it's one of the main reasons that some of the biggest and most desirable cards end up in PSA holders is because if there's ever anything called into question about that card, whether it be, you know, it's counterfeit or maybe it's overgraded, we would pay out on the current market value of that card or the difference in value if it was overgraded and we have to adjust the grade. So that's a big deal. And because of that, and Nat Turner will talk about this frequently with regard to upcharges, is, you know, we have that one opportunity to capture the revenue for the future of this card because we're guaranteeing it once it's in this holder, for the life of the card. And, you know, PSA has been around for a long time. We've graded a ton of things. And I've seen some of the checks that Nat has to write out on that. And they can be substantial sometimes. But it just goes to show customers, hopefully, that we stand behind the service that we offer. And there's a reason you pay a little more premium for PSA is because we have something like that. So I just got hit with an upcharge today, and I was happy about it because I was hoping that, you know, often I'll put my cards in at a slightly lower level because I don't know how they're going to grade, and I can be patient. You know, I don't need my stuff back immediately. And usually when I get a message from the results department about needing to do a price adjustment, it's oh, this is good news. My card's worth more than I thought, and I got a great grade.
I want to look into the future a little bit. How do you think grading and PSA are going to evolve over the next 5 years?
Yeah, I think we have already employed a lot of tech solutions, and coming from Upper Deck, which, you know, did a lot with tech regarding, you know, a products like EPAC and things along those lines to coming to PSA, it's kind of night and day. The PSA team is so, we have such a large team in product and tech that are building tools for customers to make their lives easier. And our mission statement is very simple: make collecting safe, easy, and fun. And so a lot of the things that we're building right now are going to really benefit collectors and give them more tools to decide if they should grade certain things, and also give them a path to liquidity. So our current deal with eBay is awesome, where if I try to list something at home, I've got to take pictures and write descriptions and it's answer questions and hope the guy gets it and it doesn't have any issues. You know, with PSA, I submit it and I see the auction go live and I get payment, and it's so dang easy. We've taken a lot of the friction out of the path to liquidity for collectors. And I think we're going to see more of that. The other thing that I think over the next 5 years, you're going to see a big boom in is maybe a renaissance with our set registry program. We're going to be making a number of changes to enhance that experience for collectors. And the folks involved in set registry right now are some of the most passionate collectors I know. And I think that it's the tip of the iceberg there. I think we can be doing a lot more to introducing that type of gamification of collecting to fans. So I think that's going to be cool to see.
Interesting. Looking forward to seeing what all of that entails. Yeah. Can grading grow from here? Wait, obviously the numbers keep going up every month. So if more collectors come in and more cards get submitted, that's going to grow things. But are there other paths forward? Are there other elements of grading that you think are going to be big growth drivers for PSA as we look like 5 years out from now?
Yeah, I think you see this. You know, the hobby has gone from being something that is big in the United States and some Asian areas to being big across the world, you know, and soccer's helped a lot with that. Pokemon's helped a lot with that. But the fact that there is such a globalization of the hobby right now, I think that's really leading the charge with regard to people wanting our services more. I think the fact that most people, established collectors, have that PSA portfolio and they've, that's what they've attached their collecting to. It definitely helps as new people are getting in. They're like, oh, I want to be like Nas out there and have my PSA 10s or things along those lines. But yeah, the globalization of the hobby has been a big deal to create huge new demand for our services. Now, do new properties like One Piece you know, wrestling cards have come so far now, and you know, it's amazing to me because there were always soccer cards. In the mid 2000s, there was a website called soccercards.com, and I would refer all soccer fans over there. Like, listen, go try over there. They're the one people that do this, and now everyone carries soccer cards. So, I guess the learning from that would be for collectors to not just go with what's hot today. Try to zig while others are zagging, or find underdeveloped categories that you're passionate about to invest in that are emerging.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's lots of possibilities. We were talking earlier. For me, it is graded magazines. You guys grade magazines and comics now, and I really think graded Sports Illustrated magazines, particularly those that are autographed. I own a lot of these. I bought a huge collection about a year ago for the purpose of grading a lot of them with PSA, and I know you guys are full tilt. I actually just dropped off at the PSA Submission Center here inside Cards HQ. I just recently dropped off my first batch of, you know, signed Sports Illustrated magazines from my collection. And so those are in the grading process now, and I'm going to continue to drop batches off to the counter here at Cards HQ to get those into the grading system.
It's wild. There's absolutely a PSA effect when we open, you know, a new line of services. And Jeff, I've been blown away with some of the secondary market prices on some of these sports magazines and programs, and it's wild. You know, we've been very happy with what the comic business has done thus far, but the sports magazine business has been, you know, and much like cards. You know, a rookie card is cool, but it's that player's first appearance, their first cover is a big deal. And in even, you know, pop culture, you know, Elon Musk's first cover is selling for, you know, so much. It's wild to see. And one thing that I would, there's a lot of these comics and magazines in the wild that still, you know, it's such an emerging category. It's a lot like tickets. I would highly recommend that people use or at least experiment with the pressing service. So you can, it's really wild. You can't do things to your cards before submitting, but you can use a pressing service or a PCGS. We actually offer a cleaning service to coins. So there are some things in art, you know, in art that you can do some restoration that's okay, some that's not. The pressing service is a way to help get out creases and just make sure that before grading, the magazine looks as good as it possibly can.
Yeah.
So I've graded some without the pressing service and some with the pressing service, and my results with the pressing service have been a lot better.
Interesting. Yeah. Good to know. That's another good tip for people. Okay, before we get you out of here, I know you brought a couple of kind of cool items that I think people out there in the hobby are going to enjoy. Show these to me.
So I love, one of the niche things I love collecting is hobby history, right? So these are kind of fun things from, this one's not from my time, but Topps released a lot of player contracts that are signed by the player and signed by the great Cy Berger from Topps. And Cy used to actually go around spring training, sign players up for, you know, the trading card deal, and he would get them to sign these, and that would give them image rights. But this is from a family friend who recently passed, Randy Jones, pitcher for the Padres. But I showed him this before he passed, and he 70, was like,
75. He gave up his rights for $75. He gave up his rights to be, what, to appear on the trading card.
Yeah.
In 1976. So that was, that was the going right rates back then. Huh?
So yeah, you can see if you Google, and it says Topps chewing gum too, which is so funny because we actually, Topps for a number of years put TCG on the back of their cards, and we had so many vintage collectors select TCG cards for their cards because they thought it was Topps chewing gum that we had to change that on there. So those are fun. Old contracts are really cool. This is one that is just kind of a funny personal story. We, you know, when you are working in sports, often you're going to try to bring an athlete in or do some type of engagement with them. And we had Reggie Bush scheduled to appear at an event with us, and he couldn't make it last minute. And so Drew Brees actually filled in and was fantastic. But Reggie wrote a letter to every attendee apologizing that he couldn't make it, and he signed it. But I put it in the PSA slab because it was like, oh, this is kind of a full circle deal. And I think letters are really kind of cool collectibles because they tell a story as well. And then this, Jeff, is probably one of my most prized possessions.
Okay.
So I kept this for a number of years. Most people know if you pull something good from Upper Deck, on the back, you're going to see a signature. And it used to say Richard P. McWilliam, and now it says the family of Richard McWilliam. But Richard was one of those really interesting characters in the hobby, and someone I learned a ton from. Working at Upper Deck for a number of years, but before there were emails, there were inner office memos.
Okay.
And I've always believed that it's important to give the executive team a good understanding of what collectors are saying and what's happening out there in the market. So, I would usually do like a monthly report to the executive team. And this is Richard saying, great job on the report, which he almost never did. And you can see his signature looks a little different. He has his classic signature, but the one that we learned was this R with a circle around it. And so to have kudos from him on an inner office memo from 1999 is a fun piece of hobby history. But it's also like, you never got a compliment from the guy. So when you did, and you have it in writing, it's definitely something I wanted to slab up.
I love the history there. Of course, these are all authenticated by PSA, which is pretty cool too. For everybody watching, you can actually, these types of things, you can actually even bring into the submission center here inside Cards HQ, and they'll handle them. It's not just cards. It's magazines. Yeah, it's letters. It's photographs.
So nice. Yeah. You know, it's, you know, I worry about, I was worried about, you know, I kept this in like a portfolio and I couldn't really display it or look at it. And now this sits at my desk, and every time I look at it, I kind of smile and it reminds me to, you know, bring my best self to work each day.
There you go. That's awesome. Chris, it's been a pleasure having you here at Cards
HQ,
and thanks for the interview today.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care.
There you go, guys. That was Chris Carlin from PSA. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the episode. Let me know what you think in the comments. And don't forget, these full-length episodes of The Jeff Wilson Show are available on The Jeff Wilson Show on YouTube, as well as on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So make sure you are subscribed to The Jeff Wilson Show everywhere. Thanks for watching. We'll see you soon with our next one. Take care.